Welcome to Payment Matters. I'm your host, Jeff Lynn. Thanks for tuning in. On the show, we talk about the ever-changing landscape of healthcare payments and the impacts to healthcare payers, providers, and consumers. You can follow the conversation on Twitter at hashtag Payment Matters and follow me at Jeff B. Lynn. I'm excited today. My guest for today's episode is Steve Wigginton, CEO of Arcario. And Steve, great to have you today as a guest on my podcast. Maybe for the audience here, maybe can you tell us a little bit about your background and experience?
Absolutely, and thanks for having me, Jeff. As you mentioned, I'm the CEO of Arcario. Arcario is a company that was formed from the merger of two companies, Nobu Health and Revel, in the fall of 2020. We rebranded the company as Arcario in early January of this year, 2021. The company is focused on connecting people to the goodness, if you will, of healthcare, and really focuses on providing an interface between health plans and the consumers that they serve, with a focus on Medicare Advantage, Medicaid, and other government programs, exchange, and so on, where payers are tasked with managing both cost and quality in a largely capitated way. Prior to joining Nobu Health last fall and then merging and running Arcario here since that merger, I was involved in running a commercial health plan that was a joint venture between CVS Health Aetna and Sutter Health in Northern California. We launched that plan from its inception as a digital-only commercial health plan. And prior to that, I had a long run with Evolent Health, which was formed back in the 2012 timeframe and was really the pioneer in value-based care enablement for providers. And so as you stitch my most recent history together, I think we'll find in this conversation, I can relate to the shifting payment landscape, but also the challenges that payers and providers have in consumerizing their operations under those new payment schemes. So again, thanks for having me.
Yeah, great. And thanks, Steve, here. So this is interesting here, as you've clearly have been involved in the health plan side and have been involved, clear background tied to that. And as part of the CEO of Arcario, what were payers doing before? Meaning how were they managing cost and quality? How were they engaging those consumers or members? What was the operating model back then? And it'd be interesting to compare and contrast what Arcario does and also what commonly health plans do engage their members.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, there is no back then. In many, many, many instances, it still is a big challenge for health plans to communicate with people, consumers, human beings as individuals. In other industries, financial services, airlines, hotels, credit card companies, retail, Amazon, Stitch Fix, you see example after example where the business model is predicated on personalization of message, of offer, of channel, of tone, of motivation, leveraging behavioral sciences, leveraging data science to create an affinity and a loyalty that drives profitable relationships in those industries. You know, healthcare, particularly payers, if you go into the inside of these institutions, their information technology systems, the business architectures were all really built around A, contract a network of providers at favorable rates and terms, and B, collect and pay claims on behalf of their members. And even the use of the term members really is a bit of an inhibitor in terms of how they are able to speak to people as people. And so what they have done in the past to manage cost and quality is largely blanket communications, a massive mailer to every female member in their membership, encouraging them in the month of October to have a breast cancer screening, which is certainly a great thing to do, but it's very inefficient. It's not targeted, generally speaking, doesn't drive results. So you do see a tremendous amount of broadcast communications, confusing communications that are disconnected from one another. The quality department sends something on one day, the marketing department the following week. I get an EOB, which most of us probably list, your listeners probably know, is an explanation of benefits, which is anything but an explanation. And so as a consumer, a member of a health plan, I am bombarded with disconnected, well-intentioned, but largely not consumer-oriented communication. What Acario does is help our health plan customers cut through that noise and get very, very focused and communicate to individuals with a high degree of personalization, both of message, offer, and channel. So if I prefer a text message, or I prefer an email, or I prefer you mail me something and then call me later, particularly as you look at Medicare Advantage populations, managed Medicaid populations, exchange populations, you know, these are populations where health plans must both deliver on a cost continuum in a sustainable way, but are also subjected to rigorous quality measures. How many members had breast cancer screenings when they were supposed to? How many of them had annual wellness visits in the Medicare program, et cetera? And so what Acario does is helps narrow those communications, drive those clinical results that drive the quality measurements, and by definition, that translates into a cost saving.
Got it. And I think that communication aspect, clearly you're right. I think healthcare is littered with I get paper EOBs. When I go see a doctor, I get bills coming through the mail left and right here. You know, and it's, I remember like maybe a decade or so ago where I think one of the national retailers, you know, could actually figure out whether someone was pregnant by their shopping history, right, and actually target communications tied to that. Right. I forgot the actual retailer name here. So this is interesting here. So how, you know, in this age of personalized communication, and clearly when I go search for some furniture online, I start getting targeted ads tied to that. How does that relate to, you know, healthcare in terms of, do consumers want that, or do people want that? Is that a relevant thing? And also, how do you approach that from a privacy perspective? You know, as you know, healthcare is really sensitive here, and but how would you approach that?
Yeah, well, those, you've got two questions. I can answer them probably in a sort of intertwined way. And what I mean by that is, there is a bunch of information that is available in the public domain, consumer data that is available in the public domain, which we acquire, that helps us essentially create a digital clone, an understanding of your purchase habits, of your voting habits. Do you have a pet? All of these things which feed algorithms that help us personalize communication. The privacy angle is incredibly important in healthcare. So any communications that we are triggering on behalf of our health plan customers are, number one, branded for that customer. If it is Blue Cross, Blue Shield of Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Rhode Island, as a for instance, the communication to that member is labeled and is coming from, in all intents and purposes, from Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Rhode Island. So there is a trusted relationship there. I've got a membership card from this institution. I get bills from them. I get claims payment notices. So we leverage that trust relationship and all the underlying regulatory structures that allow us to do that. And then number two is, we only engage in health activities that promote health. And so the judgments that we make with our clients are, is it better to encourage people to get a colon cancer screening if they're in Medicare Advantage and they haven't had one for more than 10 years? Or is it better to not communicate with them? No, it's definitely better for them and for their health. And we've had tremendous positive response to personalizing those communications and then offering the kinds of incentives or rewards or behavioral science nudges that get people to take healthy actions. And the feedback to that has been overwhelmingly positive. But your question around privacy is really important to us, because we need to communicate in a way where the individuals that we're communicating with feel that they're in a trusted communication relationship and they're not getting bombarded by the example you used. You know, hey, by the way, you were looking for a sofa? We make sofas. That's where you get into a level of consumerism that feels more like advertising than health support.
Yeah, I got it. That makes sense. It's a fine line, right? And it's a clear line here, especially in healthcare. You know, as I kind of think about this, which is there's an, you know, multi-channel marketing has been around for quite some time. And maybe that's the wrong word here, to be used here, but engaging, you know, the blanket email that you, the blanket mailer that you described earlier. What are those channels that are commonly used and where people really are receptive to these channels? Like, are there specific channels that you think are have a higher rate of open door? What's your point of view on that?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And the answer is yes. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you give me or our company, if you give Acario a list of 50,000 Medicare Advantage members in Florida, and we run our algorithms against that list of members, and we enhance the consumer data that we have purchased, we enhance those algorithms with that data, we create preference channels for each individual member, and then we sequence the communications based on those preferences, at least as we can distill them. And then we use machine learning to learn in near real time what's actually working. So that's part of it. And by the way, when you ask which channel, the reason I say yes is we may have one decile of the population that we're seeking to communicate with that we are targeting with a fancy piece of print, and we're following up exactly 2.5 to 3.5 days later at certain times of the day, to be clear, with a follow-up phone call. And we will see a sequence of channel activities that create optimal response. We might have other members where the health plan has received a text message opt-in at enrollment, which is becoming increasingly common. And we may send, again, a mailer saying, look out for a text message in the next week. And then when the text message comes, the open rate's 3 times higher. Now, there's obviously costs in each of these sequences, in each of these channels. So part of the optimization yield management that we do is what is the right sequence of multiple channels in some cases to drive optimal open rates, if you want to call it that. But open rates don't do it for us. I mean, we our clients measure us on actual activities. So here's 25,000 of our members who have not had, and they're Medicare age, and they have not had an annual wellness visit in more than 2 years. Go get 5,000 of them to get an annual wellness visit. That's generally kind of the nature of the asks that we get from our clients. So there's no one channel. It depends on the population. It even depends on the geography. It certainly is also dependent on the health plan. Some of these health plans are very much leaning forward on digital engagement and trying to capture emails and text messages. Others don't even have the capability to store in a system of record a cell phone number in a reliable way that doesn't get overwritten in some of these legacy systems. So taking all of that complexity off of their hands and going and solving the clinical and business problem that they have has proven to be really effective. The last thing I'll say about channels, just because it's a really good question, is if I'm a health plan, we go back to the example of the breast cancer mailing in October, or maybe it goes out in late September and it gets mailed to every female member in the population indiscriminately, and it's a nice investment, and it has a limited yield. It's a significant investment, I should say, and it has a limited yield. Part of the challenge of using multiple channels is the timing and sequencing. So if I'm in the Blue Cross plan and I go down to the marketing department and say, I want to send out 5,000 of these things to these members, it goes through its churning machinery and spits out the other end at some point. But if what I want to do is email them, then call them 2 days later, and then have this print piece arrive on the fifth day, because we've seen that in that sequence, it grabs attention and creates action, it's almost impossible for them to orchestrate inside the four walls of, you know, my call center's up on the eighth floor, my print shop's down in the basement. We outsource all of our electronic communications to the spender. And so by bringing those channels together in a turnkey way, we can take the intelligence that we generate about what channel, what message, what offer, what sequence, and then actually act on it in near real time. And that's the connection between analytics and action that has proven to be really effective for us.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Payment Matters. I'm joined by Steve Wigginton, CEO of Icario, and we're discussing the really digital transformation that's occurring in healthcare today. Did anything change during the pandemic with respect to how consumers or the people wanted to receive their communications? What was that like?
You know, yes. I don't know if what people wanted necessarily changed. I mean, I have a point of view. I wouldn't say I'm an authority on like people, capital P, but certainly I know our customers, health plan customers, their first reaction in March of last year was to pull up on the handbrake and cease all communications about anything to their members until they understood what they should be saying about COVID-19. And it was fascinating. It was about an 8-week period, and we saw it across multiple clients. Some of the most reputable health plans, the most recognized brands in healthcare, several Blue Cross and Blue Shield plans, several of the largest national health plans that especially again in government programs, Medicaid, Medicare, and exchange. Just the first reaction was stop all communication because we don't exactly know what to tell people, and certainly we don't want to tell them go see your doctor and have an annual wellness visit when everything's locked down and most physician practices were running on telehealth only. In about mid-May, health plans really had figured out, okay, what is our role here? What should we be saying? And how should we be saying it? And we saw a significant uptick there in, health plans taking responsibility for, look, testing is free, sort of communicating all the benefits and the benefit changes that they had made in response to the pandemic. So that was more transactional, but we were able to support them in that activity. And then as we got towards the tail end of the year last year, and certainly into the first part of 2021, most of the progressive health plans have shifted their focus to, I still have to make sure I'm delivering high quality care. And again, in the markets we focus in, Medicare, Medicaid, exchange, generally speaking, these are populations that are higher utilizers of healthcare. There's more risk in these populations than there are in commercial populations. They generally, not always, but generally have fewer resources and don't often seek the preventative care that long-term benefits them and their health plan. And so the attention turned to how do we get people back into these preventative screening and wellness visit and other activities that are proven to be good clinically. They avoid longer term cost financially. And oh, by the way, if I'm in Medicare or Medicaid, I have quality bonus payments or pay for performance payments. Or if I'm in MA, I'm fully capitated, and I have these quality measures I got to hit that impact the overall health and well-being of the health plan. So they really began to figure out how do we communicate in a really focused way what we want our members to do that's good for them. And then the other thing we saw, Jeff, that was a unique twist was this focus on virtual or telehealth, virtual care, telehealth, larger bucket. And we clearly saw in this country a huge spike last year in utilization of virtual health and telehealth. It has come down somewhat, but it is a modality and a channel that makes access easier. And if you think about Medicare and Medicaid and exchange populations, access is typically the number one challenge. And so we are now engaged with our health plan partners in how do we educate on click here to try a virtual physician visit. It's 45 minutes and you can get your wellness exam for the year. Click here to schedule, click here, and really beginning to create closed loops to get people back into care settings. So it's evolved. I would say, we are now being asked in real time here as we speak at the end of May, we're being asked to help support vaccination education and activation. And I think we're a little north of 50% of the adult population now vaccinated, and you know, it's the next 2025 that is going to be most important. And so we're being asked to use all the same tools I described earlier in terms of personalization. Maybe you offer a $25 gift card. Maybe you do that, you know, electronically or through print. And so we are designing these programs with our health plan partners to encourage and inspire, you know, this next kind of last hesitance group into vaccination setting.
Let me ask you this here, which is, as I look at all the things that you do and sort of the successes you've had here, where else can this extend to? We talked about EOBs before that we get in the mail. There's other aspects of even the payment experience that could be improved. Where else could this go beyond this platform that you've built and delivered upon? Where do you see this moving toward?
Where we do see growth right now in our business, sort of where we go from here, two areas that have really taken off. One is in the front end of Medicare Advantage, when people are enrolling in these programs, helping the health plans and the brokers that work with those health plans to capture information through a health risk assessment that's, you know, quite sophisticated and multi-channel, so that they can tailor the clinical support, the consumer engagement right from the beginning of that relationship, which drives retention and growth. So that's been one area where we've taken our platform and pointed it at slightly off to the side from where our historical performance has been. And then the other, which relates back to my prior experience at Evolent and in value-based care payments, is in the provider world. We have a number of conversations ongoing with risk-bearing entities, whether they're in kidney care transformation or large multi-specialty groups that have capitated arrangements with their payer partners in the markets that they serve. And those organizations are typically excellent at clinical care delivery, at clinical interventions to optimize care, particularly for, as I mentioned, like kidney disease or other chronic illnesses, where continuity and connectedness of care makes a big difference in terms of outcomes and cost. And all these value-based care arrangements where the risk is getting, maybe a pejorative term, but pushed to or assumed by the provider groups, unlocks that clinical excellence. The challenge is those provider groups are even less equipped than health plans to communicate with consumers as people. You're patient to these. You're not even a member. You're a patient. You're all the way up the food chain of, you know, kind of labels that you wear in healthcare to being a quote unquote patient. Even if I'm not sick in the moment, but if I'm in a panel where I'm attributed to a group and that group is taking risk on the performance of that panel, and that group is not communicating with me at all because I'm not showing up in the office, that doesn't portend for a good outcome when there's a reconciliation on that value-based care arrangement. So that's the other place we're starting to see, we are definitely seeing interest and uptake on the behalf of these provider groups to say, hey, wait, can you give me that sort of Delta Sky Miles sophistication for these 27,000 MA members that I've been attributed to my practice? Because only 13,600 of them are actually going to come in the next 12 months. And so whatever my special sauce is as a provider, I'm not going to get the chance to deliver it. I'm not going to get the chance to create some connectedness, and I'm not going to get the chance to avoid an ER visit or a missed annual wellness visit that affects risk assessment and so on. And so those are the two areas that we're, you know, I would say are not only next, but they're happening.
Got it. It sounds like a lot of opportunity across the spectrum of healthcare. Why don't you just end with this kind of one big picture question? You've clearly been in the healthcare business in many different roles. And, you know, if you had a magic pill to really address and change anything you could in the healthcare industry, what would that be? What would that be, that change here that you'd like to see domestically in the U.S. that really could change healthcare and improve you know, our experiences, et cetera. Like, what would that be? It could be anything here, but just interested in your thoughts.
Boy, that's, if I had a magic pill and there was one thing, I think, you know what my reaction, Jeff, is like, the, one of the hardest parts about healthcare is there isn't one thing. Like, things that pop into my head right away are, you know, number one, treat me like a person, like my gym membership is more welcoming than my health plan relationship, you know, and so that I feel connected to it. I'm persistent with it. If I'm persistent with it, I get better long-term care. I have lower long-term costs, which ultimately, if you talk about improving healthcare, I think affordability of great outcomes is the constant challenge. You know, so certainly that pops to mind. I also think about, I'm married to a practicing physician, 20-year OBGYN. You know, the physician-patient relationship has been materially disrupted and changed. And yet the payment models and the professional hierarchies and even the regulatory and compliance frameworks haven't kept up. So some of these innovations, I think, could move more quickly in terms of the physician-patient relationship.
Got it. That's great, Steve. I wish for that to happen, and hopefully we are moving toward those visions of where it needs to be. And I'll say that, you know, those are the payment matters we're tackling today. Thank you to my guest, Steve Wigginton, for joining me today. Steve, where can our listeners learn more about you?
Well, I'd invite everybody to come to our website, which is IcarioHealth.com, IcarioHealth.com. You can learn about the company there, and certainly feel free to reach out and contact us through the website. We'd love to chat with you.
Great. Thank you much. Thank you so much, Steve. And thank you to all of you who are listening in. Yeah. Remember that you can listen in to this episode weekdays at 4:30 a.m., 12:30 p.m., and 8:30 p.m. Eastern. You can also listen to this on Apple Podcasts and Google Play Music, or just say, Alexa, play Healthcare Now Radio. If you have a comment about the episode of the show, follow hashtag Payment Matters, or connect with me on Twitter at Jeff B. Lynn. You can learn more about the show at healthcarenowradio.com or at instamed.com. Until next time, I'm Jeff Lynn.